Hello everyone, I'm Tony and this is Ange, and we run the Back to the Future the Musical fans Facebook groups and social media accounts. Our Facebook group now has over 4,000 members. We're also posting to Instagram and Twitter, and you can find all of our past interviews on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, and all the other popular podcasting platforms. And today we're thrilled to be joined by the newest mayor of Hill Valley, who brings an unbelievable amount of energy to the Adelphi Theatre stage. It's Jordan Benjamin. Thank you so much for giving up some of your free time, Jordan. How are you at the moment?
Good. Like chilling. Thanks for having me. You've caught me the day after our day off, so I'm feeling like especially fresh this morning. So yeah.
Just back from Egypt. How was your holiday?
Oh my gosh, it was amazing. It was great in a lot of ways, but it was also challenging in some ways, just because as soon as we got there, it was like a massive culture shock because things are so different out there. But it made me think and made me like reflect on my own life, but also we just had a great time.
Fantastic. Right, so we'll get started with the first question. That's going to be from me. So John, you are only 22, am I right?
Yeah, that's right.
Already done so much. So you've done commercials, you've done Dibber Sparks when you were a kid in Rocket.
I was waiting for someone to mention this.
There is a really cool video that I've watched of you as a little kid doing a little rap in that show, no. Which is amazing.
No, you didn't watch that. No, you didn't.
I think we might have to edit it in. Yeah, I'm sure Tony can edit that in if you want.
No, please don't.
This is the beat of Rocket's Island. There's a new boy here and his name's Brandon. I'm chilling with Rocket and Jaden Alf. But Brandon's not nice, he can't be my pal. Alice beats a chicken, she's really crazy. Brandon just sits there, he's really lazy. There's lots of stones, but there's lots to do. And lots of mysteries, we love them too. I like this girl called Bethany Summers. She always has Team Bethany with her. She likes Rocket and Rocket likes me. It gets confusing like a dog in a tree. There's a popular boy and his name is Healy. He's rude to Brandon, he's a big meanie. I don't like it, it's never happy ends. All I want is everybody to be friends. Me and Rocket are best mates. But sometimes we argue and hate. But then Brandon comes along and ruins it. I'm coming to the end of the song. Anger fills me, I can't be heard. I just want to be free like a bird. I'm angry because I never get my way. And lash out and ruin other people's day. It was wrong, I know it now, it was wrong. So if you ever feel like your friend's been taken, don't let the anger inside you be awakened.
Tito Jackson in Man in the Mirror, you've had a single, did your West End debut in Hairspray with some phenomenal pink trousers, Rain and Zoe, so you've done loads already. And we always like to start by seeing how that journey began. Like, how did you start, right, way back in the day?
Well, I started when I was about, like, I started acting professionally when I was about 12 years old. I was like back a little bit more when I was about 10. I grew up like in Leytonstone, not really like knowing much about the acting industry or anything like that. I just did school plays and I just knew that I enjoyed it. And then there was like a little acting club going on at the side of my road. And my mom basically forced me to go because I was like, mom, like it's the summer holidays. I want to go out and play football. I want to mess up with my mates. I don't want to be doing some acting class in the summer holiday. Like, who wants to do that? But then she was like, no, Jordan, you're going. So I was like, okay, fine. So I went and it was the best decision of my life because there was a lady called Suzanne McLean, who was an actress herself, but also ran a Saturday theatre school. Four kids like me, and she saw me there as well as my older sister, and she loved us and offered us a scholarship to her Saturday theatre school, which was amazing. And then through there, I got in a glee group that would then like perform in lots of different competitions, and we won a competition on CBBC, and then meant that we were going around like performing in lots of different galas, lots of different places. And an agency saw me at age 11 singing at one of these places and invited me in. And then I got my agent when I was 11. And then I had my first professional acting job when I was 12. It literally happened because my mum forced me to go to a little acting club on my road. That's how I started out.
Wow. Credit to your mum there.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, it's funny to see how these paths sort of find their way, really. Do you remember, obviously, you were going to this theatre school. When was the first time you really went to a theatre show and saw something and felt inspired by what you were seeing?
Well, I didn't really go to many theatre shows when I was growing up. I vaguely remember being about 8 years old and my older cousin taking me to Lion King, but I don't really remember much of it. I think the times that I was the most inspired by theatre was probably when I was a little older. I remember I watched Wicked and I really, really, really enjoyed that. But I think the time that I felt the most inspired was probably through like musical films, because I had more access to like musical bit, like anyone can watch them. And actually, funny enough, growing up, one of my favorite musical films was Hairspray, because I just thought it was like great, because I remember watching it and thinking, like, you know, being a little kid and thinking, you know, like Hairspray, like that's for girls, like I don't want to watch that because like it's all glittery and stuff like that. But then I watched it and I was like, no, this is great, like I love this. Yeah, it would make me want to sing and dance even more. And I think, yeah, it's probably like due to that made me fall in love with musical theatre.
But you've mentioned Hairspray there. We know that the pandemic was such a horrible time for everyone, but for the theatre industry, it essentially closed. How was that time for you? And then when you reopened your first performance back in Hairspray?
It was the best, I think, the best and worst time of my life, because I think I was casted in Hairspray when I was 19. And I didn't perform in it until I was 21. That's how long the pandemic seemed, and it was. When I was 19, I was very prepared for it, but being stopped by the pandemic was actually a blessing in disguise, mainly because that meant that I had a lot of time now to work on myself, not only as a person, but also in my like fitness level, so that I could be able to do the show 8 times a week, because that I wouldn't have been prepared for at the age of 19. And also like trying to like maintain things like my voice and my eating and sleeping, but also trying to, you know, sort out like my mind and my own like self-doubts and any kind of imposter syndrome of being around these people who have, you know, been in dance since they were 5 years old and done the 3 years at drama school. And then there was me, who just kind of seemed like he was fluking it. So there was a lot of that kind of needed to, you know, be sorted out. And I think there was a lot of time to do all that in the pandemic. And then by the time I did Hairspray when I was 21, I felt like fully ready for it. And that opening night, there was nothing like it. Like, even though the Coliseum is like a 2.7 like capacity venue, but there was only like 1,000 people in there. But the noise that they made, I've never heard a noise that loud. Like to this day, I still haven't heard a noise that loud, and there was only 1,000 people in there. It was immense, and yeah, I like just goosebumps, the feelings just running through. It was incredible.
Of course, Andrew's mentioned a lot of the things that you've already done in your career to date, but what we really want to talk about is your role in Back to the Future, or roles, Goldie Wilson and Marvin Berry. How much did you know about Back to the Future before you booked this job?
I honestly, the only thing that I knew about Back to the Future was that it was a staple. I hadn't actually seen the movies growing up. Funnily enough, I finished Hairspray, and then about a month later, I watched Back to the Future, the musical, and I hadn't seen the film, so going to it, I was like, should I probably see the film first? And I was like, ah, screw it. Like, you know, world, like, if we're confused, we're confused. But I sat there and we absolutely loved it. Like, it was incredible. Like, we loved it. And funny enough, because we went with a few of us from Hairspray, including my good friend Charlene, who was friends with Cedric. So at the end of the show, we were at a stage door and we spoke to Cedric. I was like, yeah, I thought you were brilliant. Like, because I really was blown away by his performance. And I just wanted to tell him how amazing he was. Little did I know that about 8 months later, I would be the next Goldie Wilson, which is mad. But yeah, that was the only thing that I knew about the show. I'd seen it once then, and I absolutely loved it. And then I was like, yeah, it would be nice to be in the show. I just didn't know if I could do it. And then lo and behold, I'm here now. So yeah.
John, you can tell us about your audition process. When did it begin for you? And what was it? What was your process?
My audition process was like really long. My first audition was in January, that was like a self tape. And funny enough, it wasn't even for Goldie Wilson. It was for another character in the show. I won't say which one, but I didn't start out auditioning for Goldie Wilson. And then slowly, they were like, okay, can you keep doing that material, but can we also see you do Goldie? And so, like, over the next few months, I was doing both of them. And even when I was in the audition, we could all feel that I felt so much more comfortable and at home when I was singing Gotta Start Somewhere than any of the other songs that I was singing. And it felt like natural. It felt great. And I even remember when I did it in front of John Rando, who was on Zoom at the time, because he couldn't make it there in person. Even then I could feel that he knew that I was so much more comfortable with the Goldie Wilson stuff. But it was a long process to the point where I was still auditioning by May and I started in January. And by May, I remember there was like a month where I didn't hear anything. So I thought, oh, I didn't get it. Like, it's gone. Like, let me just focus on other things. And then, you know, and then all of a sudden they were like, oh, can we invite you back in just to do Goldie? Because we'd love to see you for Goldie. And I was like, okay, when would you like to see me? And they said, okay, could we see you on the 13th of May? And that's the only day that we can do. And I was like, ah, that's my birthday. And they were like, oh, but there's no other day that we can do. Can you just come in? I was like, okay, cool. So it was my birthday, and I go in to my which I later realized was my final. And I went in to like a panel of maybe 15 people, not knowing what to expect. And I walk in, and as soon as I walk in, Mr. Nick Finlow goes, and they all sing me happy birthday before I've even done anything. So that was a really surreal experience. And then after that, I had one singing session with Nick, and then soon after I found out that I got the part.
Fantastic. They really, it seems like the cast and crew and the team are just so friendly and like to put everyone at ease. It's great to hear stories like that, that obviously, hopefully that would have put you at ease and not thrown you off your audition. You did mention meeting Cedric at stage door and having a mutual friend there. He left some pretty big shoes to fill. Were you able to like have a chat with him about the character? Was he able to offer you any advice or anything in that transition period?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, Cedric was really, really helpful. Like, so helpful. I remember like the first week of rehearsals, and this wasn't helped with the fact that I got COVID in the first week of rehearsals, which didn't help. But in the first week of rehearsals, I realized that I was spending a lot of time alone. And I was wondering, like, why that was. Like, a lot of the times I was sitting outside, like, writing my own notes, because I make tons of notes about my characters and stuff like that. I'm very, like methodical. But it was a case where I was sitting outside a lot of the time, and everyone was in different rooms doing either singing or dancing, and I wasn't in there. So I remember one of the days I just noticed it, and I felt some type of way about it. So I messaged Cedric and asked him if he felt like that as well, or if he could relate to my situation. And as well as him being like really helpful with, you know, helping me understand like Goldie as a character and what got us somewhere means, that moment really meant a lot to me, because what he said later was, he was like, yeah, Goldie doesn't have relationships with anybody in the show. Like the only like loose connection that he has with anybody is we see his friendship with Doc, when Doc asked him to put the cable on top of the clock tower. But he said to me, Goldie is an island, in that, you know, he sings a song which really isn't for the characters, because it's not a message that gets repeated in the show at any other point. It's none of what he says gets referenced by George or Marty or anyone who was there. Which is why halfway through the song, George stops listening, goes off stage, and Goldie begins saying it to the audience, because the message is not for the people on stage. It's not. It then breaks the wall that's there and becomes a message directly to everybody sitting in the theater. And when we were talking about this, it really helped me understand Goldie's role in the show, because I mean, like, I think I've said this before, like, it's funny that Goldie could be a fairy and the show would still make sense, because like he comes in, like, sings a magical song and then disappears, he could very well be that. But it's really important, like, what he does, and to not feel, you know, that he's any less of a part of the show. He might have less impact on the story, but he's still a very integral part of the show. And all those conversations with Cedric helped me realise that. So, yes, Cedric was so, so helpful.
That's great to hear, and what a great takeover you've had, Jordan. And I think one of the very first things I said to you was, one, how phenomenal you were, like, how much I loved your performance, but also how I loved how distinctly different your Goldie and Marvin were. How did you go about achieving that, to make sure there was that separation?
Honestly, because I know that the two characters are so different, I think in rehearsals, the characters are probably even more different than they ended up being when we like finally performed. I think I took kind of inspiration in both of their styles with like different artists. So I went, Goldie Wilson is probably more the like the energy of like a Michael Jackson, and like the voice of like a Stevie Wonder, like that kind of side, whereas Marvin Berry is more of like a Barry White, or like like a little bit smoother. And in rehearsal, Marvin Berry's voice was so much lower than it is now. Like, it was so much lower, to the point where Nick literally had to say, Jordan, like, it's great, I love what you're doing with Marvin. Stop making his voice so low. this is too much. I was like, oh, fine, okay. But yeah, it's more because I knew they were different and their vibes were different. And like reading the characters, I knew that Goldie was more like the incredible like optimist with like so much energy, so many dreams, and doesn't want to stop until he achieves them. Marvin Berry is more like the kind of smooth, down to earth, like doesn't really care about like like society or like the man. He kind of just brushes everything off. Like everything's a joke, everything's vibes, everything's smooth. And I really wanted to make sure that I was representing them as different people rather than people just thinking that, oh, it's Goldie again. No, it's not Goldie. It's someone completely different. And so I was very glad when I came out of stage door and you said that. I was like, yes, we did it. So, yeah.
Well, it works. Definitely works.
It's funny that you got this link to Mad in the Mirror. As a song that Glenn Bard was involved with, obviously working on Back to the Future, you get the opportunity to work with these huge names like Bob Gale, Alan Silvestri, Glenn Ballard. How did you find working with them? Was it intimidating? I mean, they're all really nice guys, and you know, we've had some great chats with them. But what was that experience like for you meeting them and working with them?
Well, I think I didn't really work very closely with Glenn Ballard and Alan Silvestri. I met them like once, but the person that I had the most close involvement with was Bob Gale. And meeting him like at first was like, oh my gosh, that's him. That's Bob Gale. I was a little bit like I was a bit jittery like with that, because you know, because his name is like. Like he is just Back to the Future. But when he like first saw us, and we kind of stood like around him, and the first thing that he said, like he looked around at, I think it was myself, Ben, who plays Marty, Ollie, who is George, and Harry, who's Biff. Us four kind of just like stood around him because we were like prepared to do the diner scene. And he just looked around at us and said, wow, this is really good casting. And it just really warmed my heart. He's just so great. Like, I think we were just like taken aback with how sweet and kind and how encouraging he is, and how, you know, we still get emails from him. We're wishing as well. It was a brilliant idea. Unfortunately, I couldn't be there, but it was a blessing because Tavio got to do it for Back to the Future Day when Tavio did a duet with Harry Waters Jr. Which was just like amazing. Like it was such a moment, and I was like glad that like Bob Gale was like bringing us in and saying this would be a great idea, should we do this, and yeah, he's very much like involved in everything, which is like incredible. But not only that, but he's just so like kind-hearted. Like we all love Bob. Like he's like our like he's like all of our grandpa. Like he's amazing.
Really cool. One of the huge opportunities you've had, John, since you joined the cast was to perform at Magic at the Musicals. Some of our members were there and shared the footage, which was amazing. How did you find that? Surely that was like mind-blowing moment for you.
Oi, that day was mad. When I found out that I was going to be like performing at like the Royal Albert Hall, and not only that, but I was going to be doing a solo at the Royal Albert Hall. You've got to remember that every single time I get a call that says like, oh, you're now Goldie Wilson, Back to the Future, you're now like performing at the Royal Albert Hall, I'm still like the kid who's like 10 years old in like Leytonstone with no connections to the industry whatsoever, and just happened to be in the right place at the right time. And when these things like happen, I'm like, but seriously, is this happening? So like when I was actually there and I stepped out to do my sound check, it was like the way that the sound travels in like in the Royal Albert Hall is mad. Like the acoustics, because the place is so big, I just couldn't believe where I was. And then after my sound check, we had hours of waiting until the evening show, and so I didn't really have much to do. I shared a room with two guys. I was in a room with Sam Tutty from Dear Evan Hansen, and also Tom from And Juliet. I was in a room with both those guys, and like being in a room like with them and having people like coming in and out like made the time go a little faster, but the time didn't seem to move. Like the day was just so long. But then by the time it came to the time, I was so, like, I don't think I've ever been as nervous as I was that day. Like, I was so nervous, to the point where it was almost my turn. And if you didn't see, like, on stage, when people go off, there's like a black curtain until they go like behind to where backstage is. But when you're next up, you actually stand in front of the curtain. So you're out on stage and you can see everything, but no one can see you. So I was out there, and also I was especially nervous because guess who was just before me? Phantom of the Opera. And I was like, I've got to follow Phantom of the Opera. Whose idea was this? But then I was like, okay, fine. And then I was stood out there and I was so nervous. And I remember the cast of Sister Acts at the time just holding my hands. They had no idea who I was. But they were like holding my hands, and they kept saying to me, "You're here for a reason. You're here for a reason. You're going to do amazingly. You're here for it." And they were so encouraging, and I was like, "Yeah." And I went out there and I heard the crowd, saw the crowd. Didn't really see all of the crowd because like the way that the lights were so bright, I could only really see the people directly in front of me and directly beside me. Everybody else was completely invisible. I couldn't see anything. So I was like, you know what, screw it. Let me just go for it. So I went for it. And then like right at the end, the lights turn off. Like the lights that were blinding me turn off, like when I punched the air. And then I could see everyone. I realized what had just happened. And I was like, that felt like 20 seconds. Honestly, when I was out there, it felt so fast. But if it was 20 seconds, it was the best 20 seconds of my life. So yeah, it was incredible.
Oh, that's so special. Were your family in? Did they manage to get in there?
It was pretty heavily sold out, but I had my two sisters who came and supported me, and they loved it. They absolutely loved it. So yeah.
Great. That was like one of the first opportunities for the public who weren't coming to see the show to see someone different in the role. I think you were the first cast member of the new wave of cast to do something like in like outside of the show. One of the differences and something that people always talk about who have seen the show before, who then see it with you, is the difference in the choreography and energy that you bring to like Goldie's dance routine. I mean, I'm sure Cedric won't mind us saying you've got a good 20 years on him. You know, you're a lot younger and have more energy, let's say, as a younger person. How much of that change did you have input into? Like, how much of you did you bring to that? Or how much say did you have in that new choreography and the new moves?
Yeah, I was like, the creative process was amazing in that sense, because I came into this and one of my hopes, and they won't mind me saying this, like one of my hopes was, I was like, I really hope that I don't come to rehearsals and they say I do something and they say, oh, but Cedric didn't do that. And it becomes like that kind of thing. Because to be honest, I don't really like to work like that. Like it's like whatever I do, I like to put a little bit of me into it. I think I heard in Hugh's interview that he was talking about like having ownership over like your work. And so yeah, I love to have like a little bit of me in it. And when I arrived, they basically said, okay, Jordan, so we've got whole new choreography for you and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, perfect. So when we were going and when we were doing that, yeah, it was very much a collaborative process. There was even a time when I was off with COVID, but while I was off, I had an idea. And then I basically sent a video of me at home with my broom at home, sending it to Darren and going, okay, hear me out. What if I do this? And then I go like this and then like spin and then I do this. And he actually like messaged me back and he was like, oh my God, I can't believe you've done this. Yes, absolutely. We're putting it in. And I was like, yeah, great. So it was very much a collaborative process in trying to find my Goldie and how my Goldie is going to be so different. And but not only just so different, just because it, like just to be different, but it is different because me and Cedric are different.
Yes.
So it was a point where to make Goldie my Goldie rather than me trying to be Cedric's Goldie, which is hard because Goldie was pretty much made for Cedric. So it was hard to kind of like fit. And I was thinking that we might struggle, but no, it was really nice. It was really good.
You've definitely put your own stamp on it. It is Jordan Goldie now, like definitely. We also like to make sure that the people who watch these interviews understand that there's all sides of the industry and it's not all sunshine and rainbows. One of the things we talked to Katie Pearson about was the grind between booking shows and like going to auditions, that gap. Another aspect is obviously that performers with such arduous schedules can get injured. And we know that last year you did suffer quite a serious injury. We're wondering if you wouldn't mind telling us about how did that happen and how did you get through that awful period?
Yeah, so at the beginning of October, I think it was, I was in the middle of Gotta Start Somewhere. And in the middle of the song, my voice completely cuts out. Like on stage and like I finished the song trying to sing as much as I can, but not much sound is coming out. Like my entire top register is just breath. And the only sound that's coming out is in my like lower register. So I had to sing the rest of the song in the octave lower. And then I went off stage, I went to the company office and spoke to them and they were like, oh my God, what happened to your voice? And I was like, I have no idea. And I genuinely didn't. And at the time, I felt no pain as well. It was just my voice. So I was like, what's going on? Blah, blah, blah. So I finished that show, trying to do as much as I can to get through it. And then I went and saw a ENT specialist a couple of days later. And when they showed me my vocal cords, to my horror, my vocal cords were swollen and bleeding and bruised, and yeah, it was really bad. And then the ENT said, oh yeah, you've got to not sing for 2 to 3 weeks. You've got to be like completely on vocal rest. So he wrote me off the show. And I think when I was sitting there, the main thing that I felt was that I just let everybody down, that I let myself down. It was tough because, I mean, there are like reasons why we think that it did happen as well as just being like just overused. But when it happened, I was distraught. And so, and you know, because it's really difficult in a show that you do 8 times a week for it not to consume your life. So when you don't have it anymore, it's like you have nothing because that's all you were doing. And so at the time I didn't have anything and I was just at home resting. And at first I decided, you know what, let me just, you know, treat it kind of like a holiday where I'll just, you know, chill. I'll see my family. I was told I can't really see like many people outside, I wasn't particularly happy with there was times where they had like company parties at Back to the Future. Like there was like a bowling party with Grease, and there were like lots of different things that I couldn't go to because, you know, the fear of like further damaging myself. So there were a lot of things that I felt like I missed out on, and seeing everybody else like keep doing the show, like keep like going, and I was kind of like held back. It was really difficult. I'm going to be completely honest. It was really difficult. But then like a month passed, and I felt a lot better, and I suspected that I would be going back to work. I went to an ENT specialist again, had the camera go down my throat, and when he showed me my vocal cords, he said, yeah, there's still some residual swelling, so you can't go back. I was I think this was probably the hardest moment, because when I first got the news, I knew something was wrong, and then I got told that I've got a rest. Now it was worse, because I'd convinced myself that I was completely fine again, and then gone and been told, no, you're not fine. And also told that I've got to take another month off, which, yeah, was heartbreaking. I didn't know what to, I didn't know what to do with myself. I had a holiday booked around there anyway, so I went on that holiday, but I couldn't stop thinking about like what was my situation. It was really tough. But honestly, I never would have got through it without like a few things, without my family, because my family were here constantly reassuring me that, number one, I am still employed. number two, this doesn't take away from anything that I've done. It doesn't take away from anything I'm going to do. And in the grand scheme of my entire career, 2 months vocal rest is nothing. Yeah. Even though it ended up being like 3 months until I was back full time. So that it felt like, it was a quarter of the year was me not performing full time. And I did feel that, but they were constantly like reassuring me and like helping me go through it, which was amazing. Second is the show, and I have to like put in a word for Colin and Phoebe, the wonderful producers of Back to the Future, because they looked after me so well. They were so they were constantly communicating with me, checking that I was okay, sending me to ENT specialists, sending me to vocal therapists, sending me to vocal coaching, to speech therapy, and they were just doing it and saying, yeah, like, you know, because we value you so much and we want to see you back. That was always the message. I felt very like grateful that they like believed in me enough and believed in my recovery enough to do that. Otherwise they wouldn't have. And also my fellow castmates, who all the time I was getting messages like, we miss you, like, we want to see you back, and stuff like that. Like I would have been in a much, like I was in a pretty deep place, but I would have been a lot deeper in the hole if I didn't have an amazing support network continuously pulling me out. Which was how I got through it.
Yeah. I mean, fans were waiting to see you come back. Obviously, everyone was enjoying Teriol's performance, but we did want to see you back on stage as soon as we could. It was great that you got to ramp up and make sure that you were well before you did that. And you did miss a huge chunk, but you've still managed to experience quite a lot in the show. What has been your biggest highlight so far?
That's hard. It's probably probably, do you know what? I would probably say, aside from our first official show, which was incredible, I would have to say my first show with Corey was like so great, like for so many reasons, because I came back and Corey's like, and we had like a conversation and we spoke like we'd known each other for years. Like Corey is an incredible human being. And then I came back and I did the show, and it was like I was experiencing the show for the first time again, like, because Corey is so like, we talk about, like, you know, like being different and like being distinguished, and Corey is amazing in his own right. And yeah, when he was back, it just made everything new and fresh and exciting again. And I absolutely loved that show. So I'd say my first show with Corey.
Brilliant. We've seen you mentioned a few times on your socials, and you mentioned it earlier on in the interview that you have seen yourself as just a kid from Leytonstone with a dream. Do you see yourself as an inspiration now for others who come from similar backgrounds?
I think I always want to push the narrative and push the message that anyone can do it, because as I said, I literally didn't have any head start possible. Like there was no head start. But things just happened in the right ways that they needed to happen. But I also don't think it's pure luck. I do think that a lot of it was by chance, but a lot of it was also just grabbing the opportunities that came my way, and that was also important too. But there was 100% a time when I thought that a kid who came from my kind of background would never be able to have a career in acting and stuff like that, because I thought you'd have to come from either a wealthy family, or you'd have to come from a particular area, or you'd have to know certain people and blah 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 blah. And when I didn't have that, I was like, there's absolutely no way I can. But then I was inspired by the lady that I spoke about earlier, Suzanne McLean, who saw me, and even though she was an actress, also ran a theater school and said, hey, come. I was inspired by her for giving kids like me, and seeing kids like all around who wouldn't have had that opportunity if it wasn't for her. And I was I was greatly inspired by her. And I think now I would love to be like that for, I know like so many like young people who are in like my position who like want to make this a career, but have no idea how to go about it and how to start. And if I can just be a symbol at this point in my career, if I can just be a symbol of, hey, you, of course you can do it. Of course you can do it. There's nothing stopping you. Then I'm going to take every opportunity to do that. And I think that's why I chose to change my bio to just a kid from Leytonstone with a dream. Because even though, as I say, I get the call to say, hey, you're performing at the Royal Albert Hall, I'm still that. And like no amount of, you know, like opportunities, or, you know, if someone say, hey, you're going to perform at the Moon tomorrow, I'm still just a kid from Leytonstone with a dream. So, yeah, absolutely.
So, Jordan, we're recording this just a few days before we say goodbye to the legendary Roger Bart, before he jogs on over to the Broadway production. What are you all going to know most about Roger?
Roger Bart. There's not another man like him. Honestly, Roger is, I remember when I first came to see the show, I was in absolute stitches, and I can tell you for free, I have never ever laughed as much as, not even close, I've never laughed as much as I did when I saw Roger at any theatre show ever in my life. Like, he's just incredible. But even though he's amazing on the stage, That's not what I'm going to miss the most about him. What I'm going to miss the most about him is the amazing like side comments slash jokes that he pulls around the circle time. I'm going to miss how he comes to our floor and always has a really like good energy. But you know, if people see him on stage and think that he's this like hyped up guy like all the time, I swear he must just save that for the stage, because when he comes off stage, he becomes this very calm, cool and collected person who is like, yeah, he's just a joy to work with. And I think that's what we're gonna miss about him the most, like the calm but joy that he brings to the building every single time that he walks into it. And he's so encouraging. Like sometimes I'll come off stage, I'll pass him, and he'll say to me that was the best that I've ever sounded, and the best that he's ever heard me. And he's like going on stage, or he doesn't need to say that. Like he needs to get himself on stage, but he just says it anyway, because he's just naturally really like warm and kind. And I think, yeah, that's what we're gonna miss about him the most. And yeah, I'm really sad that he's leaving, but you know, he's leaving us, but he's not leaving Back to the Future. So yeah, so you guys will still see him. So yeah.
He'll leave a huge hole in all our hearts, I think. But hey, like you say, he's flying the flag over the pond, so it's all good. Do you have a dream role, Jordan? Is there something that you would love to perform in the future, a dream role you aspire to?
Oh yeah, I'd love to, I mean, it's going to take me about 10 years to be old enough to do it, but I would love to do an Aaron Burr in Hamilton. I would love to be Aaron Burr in Hamilton. But at my age, I would also like to do a Lawrence Phillip in Hamilton. Like that would be sick. And I think in terms of anything else, I resonate a lot with what Rosie said when she was like, oh, I think, you know, my character hasn't been written yet. And I think a lot of musicals that are still being written, still being workshopped, are so different from anything that's out now. Like, again, like one of the reasons why as a kid I didn't think that musical theatre was for me is because I saw things like Hairspray and Grease and stuff like that. It was very heavily... you know, white like protagonists, like white people, apart from like Hairspray that had the Motormouth Kids. But like when you think of things like The Sound of Music, and you think of Grease, and you think of like a lot of, like Mary Poppins, a lot of these musicals that I knew was out, I was under the impression was of, if I'm not in Lion King for the rest of my life, I'm not gonna be in musical theatre. But even as I've grown up, there have been new shows like coming out all the time that are so different from like anything that musical theatre has seen before, in that it's actually showing people as people. I think one thing that I have said is that I would love to play a character who didn't need to be black. And I say that in a sense that I think that a lot of shows, if you are the only black character, which I've felt a lot of the time when I do shows, is that you become the sole representative of the struggle, the black struggle. Like even Goldie being put down by Lou and saying a colored mayor, yeah, that'll be the day. It's of course important for the show to represent that, absolutely. But also, you know, I am more than just the black struggle, and there are so many like people like me who are in this industry who are more than just the struggle. So, and there are always new musicals being written now. They're just writing black people as black people, and you know, and just how we are as a whole, not just our painful history. And I think that would be my dream, to do that.
Really important, I'm sure it will be in your future, but not yet. Don't go anywhere. I'm gonna slot this one in before we do the quick fire and round up. Obviously, as admins for the fan page, we are king of the stalkers. So there's a little highlight on your Instagram about snow leopards, and it says, "If you know, you know." Well, we don't know, so can you fill us in?
Yeah, that I have a weird, undying love for snow leopards. I always have. I don't know where it comes from. If you've ever seen any of my Nerd at My Crib videos, I actually have a little snow leopard like plush in my dressing room. I also have a snow leopard frame in my room that I keep. My bed sheets are snow leopard, like my entire duvet and my pillow are both the face of a snow leopard. I don't know how it started, to be honest. I think I've always been adverse to like a nice animal documentary, but my love for snow leopards, I think I just saw one day and was like, that is beautiful, and then I started researching about them, and now it's kind of become an obsession. So that's really it. It's hella random, but yeah.
Q probably has stage door gifts now of snow leopard things.
Oh yeah, I already have too much. Please don't give me more snow leopard stuff.
So I know we're approaching time now, and we really appreciate the time. Hopefully we've got some time for some quick fire questions. Make them really quick, one word answers as quick as you can. You might have seen us do this before. Okay. We want to get to know, you know, you and your fellow cast members a little bit. So are you ready?
Ready.
Who really needs to clean up their dressing room?
Oh, Ollie.
Who is too darn loud backstage?
Emma.
Which other role in the show would you most like to perform?
Doc.
What's your pre-show ritual before you go on stage?
I blow my hands twice and clap. Don't know why, I just do.
Who's most likely to corpse on stage?
Sorry, who's most likely to what?
Who's most likely to corpse on stage?
Oh, me.
Okay. Are you more like Goldie or Marvin?
Goldie.
What is your favourite line from the whole show?
Is that what they call white trash?
What's been your biggest onstage cock-up? Can you share?
Oh, I haven't actually had that many. Probably coming on stage without a cigarette and still pretending to smoke.
Okay. You talked about your crib. What is the nerdiest item in your dressing room?
Oh, anime puzzles.
And is there a nerdy item you'd like to pinch from somebody else's dressing room?
All of Ollie's Lego.
I said that might be the case. He has some action there, as we all do. Love it. Well, that's it. Thanks so much for your time. We won't keep you for any longer. Just to wrap up, we ask this in all our interviews, and you know, quite frankly, if people haven't seen the show yet, what the heck are they doing? But in your own words, why should people come and get tickets for Back to the Future, the musical?
It's simple. If you enjoy fun, then you'll enjoy the show. I think it's a thing where there's like heavy pressure, like on a lot of shows to be, you know, like very serious, like quality musical theatre. And even though it is that, it's also just a bit of fun. So I think if you enjoy fun and you have family of literally any age, because anyone can come and see it. There was really good proof of that recently when we had our first relaxed performance. We had our first relaxed performance a couple of days ago, which was so important. Because again, it's proving that anyone can come and see the theatre, can come and see the show, can come to the theatre. So yeah, that's probably what I would say. If you enjoy fun, and you have other people who enjoy fun, then come and have some fun.
Fantastic. I mean, it's true. It literally is for anyone. That relaxed performance just shows. I mean, the joy it was bringing to everyone's faces was amazing to watch some of those videos. Thank you, Jordan. We shall see you soon. We're both coming to the show within the next week or so. We'll be there for Roger's last performance, and we'll see you many times again, I'm sure, between now and whenever you end up eventually maybe leaving the show. So thanks for your time, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. Thank you. Take care.
Cheers.